Good morning. It's Betsy McCoy on Between the Lines with Betsy McCoy. It's Fighting Words Friday. We have a president who wants to fuel fear instead of fueling the economy. We're also going to talk about the likability factor. Mitt Romney, expected to be the Republican nominee for president. I wouldn't go out on a second date with that guy. He's so icy. But I will vote for him for president. Should likability matter? And what would you do to warm up that man? We'll also be talking about the mating season. He's out looking for a vice president. Ever hear of Kelly Ayotte? She's my nominee today. But first, listen to this. If you want to see somebody else in the Oval Office, you send a check in to Mitt Romney's campaign. No, I'm not shilling for him. But here's what happens to people who have been sending checks in to Mitt Romney. It's your right as an American to do so. But several days later, you might find your name on the president's campaign website with some suggestive words next to it, like on the wrong side of the law or not a good guy. The president is going to slam you publicly and say you're betting against America when really you're just seeking a better occupant of the White House. Don't believe me. Don't take my word for it. Read the Wall Street Journal this morning. It's a shocking revelation of what this president is doing to silence his critics, to literally shut down the democratic process, which is what America is all about. The president is literally waging a war on his critics, like a dictator would. Remember Nixon's enemies list? Well, we haven't seen anything like it since President Nixon. But now, welcome to Obama land. He literally thinks the country belongs to him. Take a look at the president's campaign website. He's publicly going after private citizens, not other elected officials, not politicians who have asked for it by entering the fray. No, he's going after people who run businesses, who teach in colleges, people who were just making a different choice. It's the politics of retribution, and we haven't seen anything like it since Richard Nixon's day or since the era of McCarthy before that. And think about it. The president of the United States, no matter who it is, he's got the IRS on his side. He's got the SEC on his side. He's got the Justice Department to go after his enemies. I'd like to say to this president, are you listening, Barack Obama? I'd like to say to you, shame, shame, shame that you have so little respect for our Constitution, that winning re-election is more important to you than upholding our system of government, protecting our democratic process, revering the rights that have kept us free for over 200 years. Shame on you. It's Fighting Words Friday. It's Freedom Friday. And I want to hear what you think about the president's strategy. 914-636-0110. We've got a caller. Marguerite, what's on your mind?
Oh, good morning, Dr. McCoy. What's on my mind, I may have spoken about a million times before, but just to update you, the state of New Jersey is seriously considering legislation which will permit the federal government to disperse, to purchase the foreclosed properties in various areas and then rent them out or sell them out, or in other words, resettle persons who have lost their homes through these foreclosures. Now, my neighborhood in particular has already been destabilized by this very thing. It's a very subtle, very creeping, and very slow-moving procedure, but it happens. This is the cadre that follows in the footsteps of our esteemed president.
Right.
Obama.
Now, what's your neighborhood, Marguerite?
Chester Park in the village of Pelham.
And what's happening there?
Well, the thing is, there are additions being placed on single-family homes, which indicate that not a single family with two children is about to occupy them. Even though we have constraints placed upon us by our zoning, it seems that someone or some people are looking the other way.
I get it, and it's going to diminish your property values.
Indeed,
you moved into
will.
A neighborhood of single-family homes.
And the quality
homes?
Of our lives. We
right.
are not against people coming in here and buying and paying for what they bought, but we are against having people foisted upon us that would not normally have access to our neighborhoods.
That's right. And it's lowering, it's a question of lowering the standards and the value of your
exactly.
property. So if anybody else is experiencing what Marguerite has seen, please give us a call, 914-636-0110. Thank you for calling, Marguerite.
Thank you
That's
so
a really,
much, Dr. McCoy.
You're welcome. And speaking of tough talking, we just talked about the president's very tough talking, but here's what one of his employees is doing. And this was also covered widely in the press, on television, and the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal. I'm not making this up, folks. This is a real threat to our freedom. An EPA, that's Environmental Protection Agency, regional director for the Dallas area, told the city council there, and by the way, he was on tape when he told it, which is why all of us know about it now. He was in a meeting in Dallas, and he said his job philosophy as an enforcement officer under the Obama administration is to single out a company, here are his words, crucify that company, here another word he used, punish that company as hard as you can, inspire such fear that it will force all the other companies under their regulation into, quote, submission. Now think about it. Are these the words you want government regulators and employees to use? Submission, crucify, punish? It's all on tape. It's what the Obama administration believes regulation should be about, evidently. Here's another one of the quotes from this EPI heavyweight. It was kind of how the Romans used to conquer little villages in the Mediterranean. They go into a little Turkish town somewhere, they'd find the first five guys they saw, and they would, quote, crucify them. And then you knew the town would be easy to manage for the next few years. That is how the Obama regulators look at us, we the people. That's their philosophy. Was this Obama regulator fired? No, he wasn't fired. Clearly, the White House thinks this is okay. So this Obama regulator went after one company in Texas called Range Resources, but it could happen right here in Westchester or anywhere else in the country. He went after this one company. He tried literally to destroy it. The company held firm, went to court, and the judges threw out the federal case. The judge said there was absolutely no evidence this company had violated EPA regulations. And it said, next time the EPA should do a little scientific research before, quote, punishing somebody. How did this loudmouth, lawless regulator survive this? Why hasn't he been fired? Because he's doing exactly what the White House wants him to do. Next time it could be your business, whether you operate a pizzeria, or a gas station, or have a radio show like mine. It's government overlords, thugs, throwing their weight around against the people who pay their salaries. That's us. We're the ones who are threatened by this. If this has happened to you, give me a call, 914-636-0110. And remember, never allow an IRS agent into your home. What do you think of this, Kentucky?
Betsy, you're right on. Later in the hour, we're going to be talking about what's happening with Europe's economy. And this is only a preview of how government's encroaching into all of our lives. So I think it's important that our listeners voice their opinion. Give us a call here at WVOX and tell us how you can protect yourself from the government.
That's right. And, you know, it happens in this country, but it happens much more in other countries. And that's a major reason that we should be aware of what is happening in other countries, because it's just a shore away. Remember Richard Nixon's statement, "I am not a crook." Well, here's the lie of the week. It's always a bad sign when a politician says something like, "I'm not a crook." But last week, the president of Argentina, Cristina Kirchner, said, "I'm not a thug." Her exact words were, "I'm the head of state, not a thug." Well, she is a thug. She's literally a criminal. Last week, she seized 51% of a private company in Argentina called YPF. Stealing private property is thuggery. And once the government begins taking property from any company, whether it's General Motors or a company in Argentina, nobody's property is safe. Nationalization is what communists do, what socialists do, what fascists do. First, she demonized the companies, then she denounced entrepreneurs, then she stirred up class warfare, And then finally, she took over the company. Does this sound familiar to you? What's going on around the world should be a real lesson to us to nip this in the bud before it endangers our private property, our jobs, our livelihoods, and our freedom. The way to prosper is to respect private property, to keep government small, to let markets work. Let's not fall for this demagoguery. And by the way, we're hearing it every single day. Kentucky, what do you think?
Well, I think you're right, Betsy, on a lot of fronts, but something that...
I don't just pay her salary.
Right.
She really means
no,
it.
No, the one thing I think you didn't mention that we should address to our listeners is that we do not only have to know our own history, but we need to be aware of what's going on in the rest of the world. On the next half hour, we're going to be talking about what's going on with the Dutch economy. And it's strangely familiar to our home front, what's going on here. So let's take a lesson from our neighbors overseas and learn where we're going with our own president and with our own economy.
You said it. Right after the break, we're going to be discussing Europe collapsing. And that's exactly what's happening. The spendaholics in Europe are giving away the economy and with it the freedom, the liberties of people who live in Europe. Be back after the break. It's Betsy McCoy on Between the Lines with Betsy McCoy on WVOX. Glad you're back with me, Bubba. It's Betsy McCoy on Between the Lines, WVOX. We're watching Europe collapse. Right across the pond, we're seeing the consequences of too much government spending. And the reason? Politicians in almost all those countries, I'm excepting Germany because they must have fiscal austerity in their genes over there, but the rest of the European states cannot cope with the fact that they have to spend less. The politicians literally look at the programs just the way politicians in Washington do and say, oh, we can't touch that one. Oh, no, we can't cut that one. Oh, no, we can't take money away from NPR. Oh, no, no, none of these programs can do with less money. Of course, if you'd like to recover your own sofa or take your kids out to dinner, you can do with less money because they're going to raise your taxes to pay for all these programs. But the story is that Europe is nearing financial collapse. And the reason is poor political leadership, greedy, spendaholic politicians. There is no other way to explain it. Last week, 25 countries in the EU, the European Union, agreed to this fiscal austerity program. No surprise, it was written by Angela Merkel and the Germans. They're the ones who have been bailing out the other countries, and they're getting sick and tired of it. But all the countries agreed to it. Then the politicians went back to their respective capitals and couldn't get anybody to cut spending. The Dutch government literally fell apart at the beginning of this week. The president had to resign because nobody would agree to any spending cuts. Now I hear, am I right, Kentucky? Yesterday they agreed, they cobbled together some sort of plan.
That's right, Betsy. And also, on a lighter note, something we should celebrate, as we're watching the European countries collapse because they can't collaborate, a lot of these government officials can't come to an agreement.
It's not lack of collaboration. Let me just set that straight, Kentucky. It's not lack of collaboration. They're nice guys. They just want to spend our money.
Okay.
Right?
You
they
should
think
run a commercial
they can
on
spend
that,
it
Betsy.
Better.
That sounds pretty good. I like the spin on that.
Right. They think they can spend it better than private citizens. Right. That's why the French are going to elect this socialist president instead of Sarkozy, because the socialist says, give me all your money and I will spend it for you. I will keep you in the mother nest forever.
Of course. And speaking of the mother nest, something interesting that's been going on over the past several years, college graduates are going back home to live with mom and dad more than ever before. The graduates of 2011 were reported by 20-something Inc., which is a company that focuses on the livelihood and economic situation of individuals under 30. 85%, an estimated 85% of college graduates in 2011 moved back home with mom and dad.
Wow.
But yesterday was take your son or daughter to work day. And I heard that you didn't take your daughter to work, but you did something very special along the same lines.
Well, I did. My daughter, Caroline, who is 30 and going back to graduate school, asked me to come up to Columbia and walk around the campus with her. For me, it was a walk through memory lane because I got my PhD at Columbia in 1976. And our first stop was Butler Library, the great big library in the middle of the campus. And we walked into the front door and they had a security guard there. So we were directed to the alumni office, which is right next door, to get our passes to go through the library. And we went up to the desk to get the passes, and the man behind the computer said, "Well, when did you graduate?" I said, 1976. He said, "I'm sorry, our database doesn't go back that far." My daughter was, of course, snickering then. "Oh, Mom's too old to be in the database." But we got our pass. And then this was a particularly moving moment. After I saw her, showed her where I lived and all, we went up to the card catalog in the library. And she said, "Mom, why don't you open the card catalog and see if any of your books are in there?" So I opened the card catalog, and there was the first book I ever wrote, and it had been made the 5 millionth book in the Columbia Library. It was an honor I'd long since forgotten, but they had a lovely ceremony and put a special bound edition of the book in the library as the 5 millionth volume. And so Caroline took out her cell phone, and she took pictures of the card catalog, literally the little entry in the drawer. Then she took pictures of me holding the card catalog, and then she took a picture of the two of us in front of the card catalog. And you know something? I'm going to remember that moment for the rest of my life.
Of course.
It just felt so wonderful to be retracing those steps, to feel that she really cared what her mother had done so many decades ago, and that she even had a sense of pride that maybe she'd be following in my footsteps. I don't know. It
of
was
course.
Just a magical mother-daughter moment. And you know, they're not all magical, right?
But I think it's much more magical than most people had to deal with taking their son or daughter to work. Their excuse was, "Mom, Dad, I don't want to go to school today. I want to go to work with you." And you're going to be able to see more of that as college graduates are going home to live with Mom and Dad. They may have the non-traditional take your son or daughter to work day as they're trying to put their kids to work in the economy.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that everybody's grappling with this in a different way. My girls are all up and out of the house now.
Good for
28,
you.
28, 30, and 32. Who knows when they'll be back? I love having my grandchildren come back. We've got Alex on the line. Alex, what is on your mind?
Oh, hi, ladies. That was a great great moment there that you were talking about. Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, what's on my mind is that I had the chance physically to be in a place, just for the sake of privacy, I don't want to say where, but it was one of these highly touted socialist utopias, where that's a few steps ahead of Obama's utopia. And Dr. McCoy in Kentucky, let me tell you, I was on a beautifully paved, socialist-constructed highway, and I did not see a car. I was driving literally on my side and on the other side for half an hour. Why? Truck drivers couldn't afford it. Ordinary guy that had to schlep from point A to point B, he can't afford it. They can't afford cars. They can't afford to go on those beautiful socialist highways. Little tiny morsels of food, you had to pay a price where in Manhattan you could have eaten like Caligula.
You know, ridiculous. I'm so glad you were calling in about
this.
They
were ready to mob, Dr. McCoy. They were ready to mob. Just by luck, I walked by the government health and education office, and the people are ready to riot, you know.
I'm so glad you talked about this, because so many Americans still have this vision of Europe as romantically affluent. But the fact is, and I'm referring to a Timbro study out of Sweden, the average European, middle-class European, can't afford the appliances that Americans take for granted. The vacuum cleaners, the dishwashers, the washing machines and dryers, they don't have them. And the average European lives in a home, whether it's an apartment or a freestanding house, that's less than half the size of the average dwelling in the United States. These things matter to families, whether you have privacy in your home, whether you have labor-saving conveniences. It gives women more free time to do things other than just clean and cook.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, my final observation about Mitt Romney and the iciness, you know, we live in a culture, ladies, where coolness, hipness from the baby boomers has been kind of like diffused out in the public. And so if you're a guy like Romney, got a kind of an uphill battle because he's not like that.
You know, you're so right, Alex. And I don't want to cut you off, but you're going to hear the music in a second. Don't think I'm the one putting that music on. I love having you call in, but we're going to take a break.
Okay.
And thank you for calling. It's Betsy McCoy, Between the Lines, WVOX. And when we get back, more about the Romney mating game. and what we can do to make the presidential nominee likable. What are your suggestions? 914-636-0110. Welcome back, Bubblets, Between the Lines with Betsy McCoy. So glad you held on with us. It's Fighting Words Friday. We've got a president who is fueling fear in our society instead of fueling the economy. His regulators used words like crucify, punish, submission. And of course, the biggest technique for submission of all, raising taxes so we have fewer choices, less money in our pockets to pay for things our families want. And that's why what's happening in Europe this week, which we've been talking about, is so critical, because so many Europeans are being bamboozled into changing course and electing high tax, I'm putting the word leaders in quotation marks, like France, which is about to dump Sarkozy and elect a socialist who wants to raise the top income tax rate in France to 75%. It's happening in several countries. The public is being fooled into thinking that governments can tax their way to prosperity. We know it won't happen. And yet Obama wants to double the capital gains tax rate, raise the income tax rate on high earners, impose a whopping 3.8% tax rate on you if you sell your home and make a profit. And I know that plenty of people in Westchester are going to be hit hard by that one. We New Yorkers should know better, because our state has already been clobbered by high tax rates for years. We New Yorkers are victims of high taxation. The states that don't have income taxes have done much better. Hey, Kentucky, you're from one of those states. New Yorkers keep losing population, losing economic growth, losing their own kids who go to other states for economic opportunity. They're leaving Albany, Buffalo, Poughkeepsie, and White Plains to go with cities that have no taxes, like Jacksonville, San Antonio, Knoxville. What do you think?
Well, Betsy, I think people and resources leave states for different reasons. As Bubbla knows, I'm from Kentucky, and people also leave Kentucky for a different reason than New Yorkers, because a main issue going on in that state is that it's a highly unionized state, and Washington knows best is comes in and says, no more unions, everyone needs to be entrepreneurial, create jobs in the way that both of us would like to see an economy flourish. But what Washington doesn't realize is that in a lot of parts of my state and many other parts of our country, FedEx doesn't reach certain residences. You can't get high-speed internet, for example. There's a lot of barriers that truly prohibit that entrepreneurial nature in these rural areas. So I think it's important to create economic growth at a local level, because you know your own house better than anyone else, and stop with the Washington knows best mentality. Every state is different, and when you see people migrating out of a particular state, it could be for a number of reasons.
Right, but high taxes is one of the biggest. If you
Absolutely.
Look at the last 40 years, the states that have no income tax have outpaced the states with income taxes enormously. Just take a look at a map, and now Cuomo in New York and Jerry Brown in California are going to raise our taxes again. I'm going to sing a little, Kentucky, and I don't usually do this, but here it is. When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? Right?
40 Probably
years?
Never. No, right. I don't know that song in particular, but I can
improv. You don't know Blowing in the Wind?
I don't think so.
Oh, maybe it's just the way I sang it.
Well, maybe it's...
But that's the final line of the song.
Right.
When will they ever learn? When will they ever learn? And it was actually an anti-war song, but it could be an anti-tax song,
mm-hmm.
because high taxes drive businesses.
Right. Or an anti-nanny state song, speaking of Europe earlier.
Yes.
And I love our caller Alex, his depiction of being, he wouldn't tell us where he was visiting, but being in a socialized country with a beautifully paved highway and no cars being on the road for whatever reason that may be. And also last segment, we talked about the economy in our own country and how recent graduates can't find work. And you see a lot of this coming from the media and from the government, that Government knows best. Send us your tax dollars. We'll take care of you. You won't have to worry. It's the same kind of thing when you look at moving back home with your parents. I could see how that would seem appealing to have your breakfast made for you and your clothes ironed every day. But where's the true independence? Where's the opportunity to flourish as an individual?
That's right. That's why I encouraged all my kids to go out on their own. When you look at the difference in standard of living between Europe and America, so few Americans are aware of it unless they've actually visited family members or friends in another country. I go to England often to see my oldest daughter, Amanda, and my beautiful grandbaby. And the standard of living, even for people who are educated and doing really well, comparatively speaking, is much lower than in the United States. People live in small apartments. They don't have two and three cars the way most
Absolutely.
Americans do. They have many fewer labor-saving devices, and they can't afford to go out and eat and go to the movies all the time the way Americans do. The Americans who are considered below the poverty
right.
line have televisions. That's unheard of in Europe.
Right, Betsy. And, you know, I hope Mr. Cam calls to weigh in on this. You actually... We work together a lot, and you bring up a great point with your eldest daughter, Amanda, who's expecting her second baby, your second grandbaby. Just hearing you describe the cost of maternity clothes, ballet flats, for example, any woman that lives in Westchester knows you have to have flats to transition out with your wardrobe. The difference in the cost of something so simple is incredible.
Right. And by the way, as we mentioned earlier, the European countries are going to lay on many, many more taxes because they don't have the guts to cut government spending. And one of the things they're going to do in Holland is to raise the VAT.
That's right.
That tax that many American politicians are trying to put over on us.
From 19 to 21% by October.
Right. Terrible. In Holland.
Right.
Now, of course, in Washington... The spendaholic politicians are floating the idea of a VAT. I call it a vanishing America tax. It is not a value-added tax because it's not going to add any value to your life or mine. It's going to destroy our ability to have all those things Europeans mm-hmm. don't have because it will push up the cost of ordinary goods. And it's hidden in the price tag. It's not like in the U.S. when you go to buy something, the true cost of it is on the price tag.
Right.
And then when you go to the cash register, they tell you how much tax mm-hmm. you have to pay. But in Europe, the taxes are hidden in the price tag. So government can keep raising the cost by raising the price tag. And they don't, and you don't know that price isn't going to the manufacturer. It's going to the government. That's what's making all these goods unaffordable.
And Betsy, why don't you explain to Bubba a little bit more about the quote unquote value added tax, how things are taxed in terms of the manufacturing of one good, for example, a car.
Oh, yeah. Take a car. The raw materials are taxed. Then when the chassis is built, it's taxed. Then if the seat manufacturer makes the seat and sends it to the overall auto manufacturer, that part of the car gets taxed again. So there are many layers of value-added taxes before the final product is even complete. And in countries that start out with a VAT of maybe 5 or 6%, and they always start low.
Of course.
It gets increased and increased and increased till in many European countries, it's up to 25% or more. Imagine going out to buy a car and having to pay a 25% tax to the government. That is what we are facing if we allow those Washington politicians to go the way of Europe. That's exactly why I brought up this topic today, because what's happening in Europe now... It's a mirror mm-hmm. of what's going to happen to us unless we take a stand now.
And it's much more difficult to know to what degree your personal liberty is being infringed upon when a value-added tax, for example, is included in the economy, because you can't protest the government for the rate when you really have no idea where the rate is labeled for a tax. You know, if you have a 6% sales tax, you understand in your mind, okay, if I pay for something that's $10, you can make an idea of what you're
right.
giving to
well,
the government.
The hidden nature of it is its most insidious quality.
Of course.
The worst of all, and it's why... The tax has gotten so big in mm-hmm. Europe because people are unaware that it's increased all the time, and it's what's making life unaffordable there. It's substantially lowered the standard of living for people in Europe. And of course, what are they doing with all that money? They're creating a vast nanny state, exactly as Obama's doing. I remember when Newt Gingrich called Obama the food stamp president. But he's not the food stamp president. He's the overall government dole president, because it's not just food stamps. It's the vast increase in Medicaid, the vast increase in people on lifetime disability, the vast increase in the number of people with housing supplements. Half of Americans, 150 million Americans, are now getting some form of welfare. Does that shock you?
It doesn't shock me, unfortunately, and I think the number's only going to increase because of the message that's sent to the American public that you don't know best, I know best. I'm in Washington. We can take care of you. There's this mentality and this overall sentiment that adults and individuals have to be taken care of, and it's quite absurd, and it's...
So after the break, we're going to talk about an alternative, Kentucky.
That's right.
An alternative, a nominee named Mitt Romney. He may not be likable, but he's going to get a good job approval rating. And my prediction is he's going to be elected president of these United States. Back after the break, 914-636-0110. It's WVOX, Between the Lines with Betsy McCoy. Welcome back, Bubbleheads. Betsy McCoy on Between the Lines with Betsy McCoy. It's mating season, springtime. I would love to be lying out on the grass with the dogwood petals floating down onto my face. But here we are. It's Fighting Words Friday. We're standing up for freedom, warning you about the president's intent to punish his critics, to silence his adversaries. Who will Mitt Romney pick in his fight with the president? Who will be his mate? A lot of people are talking about Marco Rubio. They're making the mistake of thinking that Marco Rubio is on the top of the list because he's Hispanic. It's not true. The polls suggest that maybe Romney would pick up 1 percentage point or possibly 2 because of the Hispanic identity of a running mate. The real truth is that Mitt Romney is looking at Marco Rubio because Marco Rubio has fire in his belly. He's a Tea Partier. He believes in our principles. This is an unusual presidential contest because this year, both Obama and Romney are going to be moving away from the center to capture their base rather than moving toward the center to compete for the independents. Both of them realize they must secure their base. Obama has to go after students, and he's doing it big time. You're going to see him in campuses all across the nation. He's going after Jewish voters because many of them are tepid about their support for Obama once he announced that he thought Israel should withdraw to its pre-1967 borders. And Romney's going after the Tea Partiers, the people who supported Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum, even Ron Paul. So Romney has to find a running mate who will help him secure his base and make him more likable, because this is mating season. Remember that wonderful TV clip of Bill and Hillary Clinton, a little overweight, chubby around the thighs, dancing in their bathing suits on the beach? It made them so likable, just like you and me. I don't look so great in a bathing suit either. But you looked at them and knew, here's a couple. They're doing it together. They have a private moment. And yet it made them look so affectionate, so just like ordinary people, right? Romney needs a moment like that. And maybe his choice of a running mate will give him not an opportunity to dance on the beach, but an opportunity to show another side of himself. That's why I brought up this potential running mate, Kelly Ayotte. She is the junior senator from New Hampshire, former attorney general of the state of New Hampshire, a highly competent woman, not well known like Marco Rubio, but very charismatic, very attractive. She would add a lot of zip and pizzazz and newness and warmth to the campaign. What do you think, Kentucky?
Well, it's interesting because everyone that I've talked to about this issue has such a strong opinion as to who would help Romney's campaign in terms of a choice of VP. Everyone seems to have a different suggestion and a passionate reason to back up that suggestion. So I think we should turn it over to our WVOX jury and see what their opinion is. Give us a call here, 914-636-0110. What will help Romney in terms of a running mate? Some people
and
say
likeability.
Likeability. Some people say he has to choose a woman. I don't think that's the case. Some people say Marco Rubio because he's Hispanic. Not quite. He's a Tea Partier. That's what resonates with voters.
Right. And of course, making Romney likable. A lot of people seem to have a grudge against him because he's rich. I see Obama saying again and again, Michelle and I, we weren't born with silver spoons in our mouths. Well, I want to make sure my grandkids have silver spoons in their mouth. I just sent a silver spoon over to my little grandbaby, Annabelle. And more silver spoons to come. That's what we all aspire to. Silver spoons in the mouths of our grandbabies. What would you do to make Romney more likable? I was trying to envision if you went out on a date with Mitt Romney, where would you go? Not to the ATM machine, not to the bank. Where would he take you on a first date?
Well, for me, it's difficult to even truly understand who Mitt Romney is because his campaign is so well managed. And I always say that his talking points are straight as they were delivered to him. He is so well managed. The campaign is tailored just like his clothes should be. Sometimes he wears jeans and looks a little slouchy. But I would love to know who Mitt Romney really is. We spoke last week about Ann Romney and how you can't put she's a loose cannon and she says what she thinks and what she feels.
Everybody likes her.
I so admire that about right. Ann Romney. So I would like to know a little bit more about old Mitt.
You know, it's interesting to see how likability plays on election day, because ultimately job approval will be more important when people go into the voting booth than likability. But likability is a factor. It brought Reagan across the line against Jimmy Carter, who wasn't quite likable. And it was very true in the battle between Al Gore and George Bush. Al Gore was viewed as a stiff, and George Bush is somebody you wanted to watch the Super Bowl with. So Romney needs to loosen up a bit. And if any of our listeners have some ideas on what would make Romney a more likable candidate, give us a call, 914-636-0110. I've heard people say he wears his jeans too high. Is that a fashion problem for him?
I would say so. That's correct. He doesn't. I think if he's the type of man that normally wears a 3-piece suit, then he should do that. His talking points and his campaign message is so researched and tailored. I think he needs to let loose a little bit. Really show who is Mitt Romney. Even if he doesn't get to that point, I think his lovely wife Ann Romney will be there, taking a stronger presence in the campaign. And like we talked about last week, any woman who's raised 5 boys, she's the boss of the house. Right. Exactly.
She knows what's happening. Well, one thing is Mitt Romney is going to stress oil prices and gas prices all summer. Maybe he ought to do some of those campaign ads working in a gas station, because fuel prices are going to spike this summer. The experts are predicting record gas prices. And one reason is, unbelievable, 50% of East Coast refineries are shutting down because of these rigorous EPA regulations. Jim, on the line. What's on your mind, Jim?
Betsy, Jim Kaloran, how are you? I'm from Habitat for Humanity. I think Mitt Romney needs to get out and get those jeans a little dirty on a Habitat site.
I think that's a great idea.
Right, put those jeans to work.
Right.
Usually every politician wants to get on a Habitat site. It's
what particular job would you give him?
It's a no-brainer. I'd make him dig dirt, paint a little bit, make sure the jeans got dirty, and then his hair got a little messed up.
Right. And then, sweat on the brow,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and get him to take his shirt off, a little sweat. A little what? Sweat, get him to take his shirt off, take some campaign pictures for him.
Well, I don't want to see his shirt off. You might, but that's not me. But that's but
for the ladies.
Saying, you know, it's kind of like the George Bush issue about whether he knew what a barcode was on a supermarket or not, you know?
Yeah, that was George Bush Sr., right, when he went to the supermarket and he didn't know the price of milk.
We're blessed. I mean, you know, we think every elected official should be out there getting dirty, and you were so coined at photo ops and press releases and how many hits are going to come. You know, just get out and be real, and I think you hit it on a couple of analogies, and that'll be his challenge. I mean, I think that's a real challenge for him. We haven't, I don't think anyone has seen that capacity. I wouldn't doubt that he might not have that ability, but you never know. If you never got your hands dirty and you're awkward when you get out there. I think we need to teach everybody to get dirty in our world. It sounds crazy, but the disconnect between the average working person and those who are supposedly our leaders has been getting further and further, especially in this technology age. So anyway, that's kind of my recommendation. And
that's a great recommendation. I'm so glad you called in. And
you two are always welcome to come on too. You know, we have fun on having.
Hey, let's talk after the show. I would really like to do that. And thank you for pointing out the difference between getting dirty and dirty politics, because we want to see our politicians get dirty, but we don't like dirty politics. And just
like
remember, this is Fighting Words Friday, and as we're closing, the point here is that we need to elect a president who respects the Constitution, who will revere the system of government more than his own ambition, who will not try to suppress the competition, who will not try to intimidate his opponents, who will not try to frighten away campaign donors, who will not use regulators, who will not support regulators like this EPA thug who wanted to crucify companies. It's these United States, the freest country in the world. In this election, we've got to stand up for freedom. Just look across the pond, as we did a few minutes ago, to see how quickly freedom can slip through our fingers with those high-taxing nanny state politicians. Thanks for joining me. Betsy McCoy, Between the Lines, WVOX. See you next Friday morning.